Sit down and buckle up. It's time for the Pirate Monk Podcast.
All right. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Pirate Monk Podcast. I'm hoping that you all are happy to hear the voice of Pablito, and I am here with...
Rob. It's great to be with you, Pablito.
Oh, my goodness. So good. So good to be with you, brother, as always. And we love doing these bumpers, filling in, helping out a little bit, just being present with each other. It gives us more of a chance to connect, you and me, and go over some material that's just so relevant. And I love being on this journey with you and so many other brothers. Samson has a big place in my heart, and I know does yours. And just the story, just in each other's stories, right? It's just so cool how we intersect. I was curious how your story's progressing in terms of have you partake in any extracurricular activities lately, brother? Or
that was definitely not a setup question, was it? Hey, by the way, can you believe they haven't fired us yet for our bumper work? I just want to agree with you. I feel honored that we get a chance to do this, and it's a wonderful excuse to get together more often face to face. So it's great to be with you today. You know, my word of the year is patience. We've talked about that in a bumper already. Last year's word was uncomfortable. As I kind of leave a season of relationship, with my former spouse and a season of trying to reconnect, you know, I continue to look for ways to grow. And what I've noticed, and this might sound a little bit sadistic, but what I've noticed about myself is that when I put myself in uncomfortable situations, like thoughtful, intentional, uncomfortable situations, I tend to grow. I mean, I grow. That discomfort forces me to look inside. So the latest for me is dancing. I am taking dance lessons. In this case, it's East Coast Swing dance lessons. Yes. And I've been like four lessons in. It's every Sunday, and it's, you know, kind of a more of a community-based approach. And the really interesting part is that I feel like the highs of life, I feel these tremendous depth of joy. And what I'm noticing is that I'm feeling a lot of insecurity in the middle of this whole thing.
Sure.
Yeah. And I mean, for guys in recovery, if you feel like you're looking for something new to challenge yourself or an opportunity to look inside, trust me on this one. Take partner dance lessons with your spouse, your girlfriend, or even just by yourself. Because here's what happens. You're learning something new that you do. Like, I don't know. I've never danced before. I have two left feet. I have no rhythm. You know, I have no reason to be on the dance floor. But so I'm learning, and as I kind of walk through the steps slowly, they tend to make sense. And then when the music starts and the beat picks up, they don't make sense at all. And then even more importantly, in order for a partner dance to be successful, it's really up to the leader, which is usually the man, the leader, to guide the partner. And there are like so many metaphors in life, right? Life and relationship inside this whole dance concept. But I find myself stuck in my head and on the dance floor trying to remember the moves, not in my body, which is really what you need to be to be successful in dance. And I find myself highly insecure, wondering what my rotational partner, you just end up dancing with a lot of different people. I wonder what my rotational partners are thinking of me, you know? And it's so crazy. I have felt 8 years old. I have felt 14 years old. I have felt a lot of insecurity, and it's really forced me to slow down and go back inside and say, hey, where's that coming from? Why do I feel this way? And what do I want to do with that? Right. And you know what? I mean, whether it's dance or any other part of life, you know, work relationships or personal relationships, isn't that the gift of recovery for each one of us that's going through this journey together, is figuring out where the discomfort comes from, slowing down to pay attention and attuning to where it's coming from and what it means, and then working through that to move through life. Is that, I mean, even though I'm talking about dance, does that idea resonate with you on other levels, Paul?
My goodness. Yeah. I mean, you're right. The metaphor of the dance of life, or there's so many examples, but absolutely 100%. I could think of a bunch of stories in my life. I'm curious. So absolutely resonates. Is this, I have a lot of curiosity around this. Does it feel like self-care as well, even though you're doing something difficult? Or is it like more like work, or is it a combo, or is it a whole nother category in your brain, do you think?
Yeah.
Your body.
Ooh, that's a good question. I haven't thought about this. Let me take a shot on the fly here. I think it's a form of self-care because I really want to learn a new skill. You know, I really want to learn something that's relational, something that I can take forward and make a relational part of my life, you know, and sure. doing it with other people in a larger corporate setting. And then obviously, you know, getting a chance to meet, you know, women in a potential partnership, all of that sounds like really exciting. So I think that's a form of self-care. It's a form of living life.
Right.
It's a form of joy that I feel and anticipate. And at the same time, it feels like self-inflicted pain.
You know, right.
It feels like there are moments when I'll walk out going, gosh, why did I show up tonight? Like that.
Right.
That left me with a lot of deep insecurity. And I walk away and I ask myself those questions. Sometimes I'm taking this to the counseling room. I mean, just to be honest with you. And really, you know, getting a chance to go back in and find out what parts of me are showing up, which parts of me are insecure, and then why do I feel that way? And again, whether it's a dance floor or the work environment or relationship, it's just another opportunity to go inside and ask those questions.
I love it. Yeah, that resonates. It sounds about right, because you're all the reasons you said, and getting out and something different. And those are the reasons it would resonate for me. For me, it's, I'm in a season of, dating, and dating for me, is very similar. It reminds me of that. In fact, maybe I'll have a dance date, you know, in a similar way, because it feels like a lot of parts come up, and yet, yeah, a lot of great adventures and new experiences and meeting new people. And it's all of the above. And it feels like, hey, I got out and, you know, like I went out last night and I had a great time, and time flew by. I looked at my phone. And I said, oh, wow, it's 11 o'clock. I think we should get home, you know, even though it's a Friday night, but still it's a good time. And anyway, and just kind of buzzing from the date. And yet I wake up, you know, with a lot of parts that really want my attention. And that's my journey now, is to celebrate the self-care and the connection and the adventure and all these things that were positives, and also make room for all parts are welcome,
that's right? It.
Like every part of me. And so that resonates. It seems kind of parallel to what you're describing. And yet, you know, at the end, regardless of what happens with your dance and regardless of what happens with me and the person I went out with last night, like, we're better for it because we went out there. You and I have a kind of a little bit of an economy for taking relational risks, right?
Yes.
We talked about that.
Yeah.
And we have other brothers that we really encourage that in our culture and challenge each other. Like, are you taking a relational risk? And not in a pushy way, but like just curious way. And I love that about what you're doing. I know you reciprocate that with me, you know, in my journey and that area that it resonates with, and maybe it does in other areas as well. But man, that's to use one of your terms, I think that those are steps towards living a little bit larger and not living as small. That's something you've talked about in the past.
Yeah.
I want to live a bigger life.
Yeah.
We only have one shot at this thing, and I don't know. They may have dancing in heaven, you know, they may have date nights in, I don't know. But you know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be the same. So this one life, this one and only life, is, we want to take a step out and do that. So awesome stuff, brother. It's always good to wrap. Let's go ahead and dive into this great interview that Nate and Aaron have. And we'll be back on the Pirate Monk podcast.
We in the Samson Society love our meetings. And we love what happens between the meetings, in friendships. We know that recovery requires relationship, that the opposite of addiction is connection. And we've also learned that there are times when we've plateaued in our recovery, or if we've suffered a setback, when it really helps to make a connection outside the meetings with an expert coach or therapist. And we've featured a lot of those people on this podcast, including the Hunters, Roan and Roe and Eva Hunter of LifeWorks Counseling in Madison, Mississippi. The Hunters are thoroughly Christian and fully trained, certified sex addiction therapists. They and their staff work with individuals and with couples dealing with addiction and with betrayal trauma. And you don't have to live in Mississippi to see them. You can actually reach them at lifeworks.ms and connect with them through telehealth. And you may not need to commit to a long-term connection with them. Maybe what you need is to attend one of the several intensives that they run each year for the Samson Society. To reach the Hunters at LifeWorks, simply go to lifeworks.ms or give them a phone call at 601-790-0583. That number again, 601-790-0583. LifeWorks Counseling is a sponsor of the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. Well, our guest this week is joining us from the wilds of Western Idaho. He's an adventurous guy with a story to tell. We are so happy to have with us Jeremy Morris. Welcome, Jeremy.
Thank you, guys. What an honor to be on here and get to spend a little bit of time with you guys today. Thank you so much.
I wish that people got to see you talking to us so they could see your magnificent beard and mustache.
Thanks.
It's looking good. How long did that take you? I'm always curious about these things.
I think like probably a year and a half ago, I kind of had a goatee and I just let her go. It was getting fall and I just thought, well, it's turning gray. So I thought I might as well embrace it.
There you go. You have embraced it. Absolutely. And if you ever want to, you know, sell duck collars, I'm sure you could pull that off too.
Yeah, even though I don't hunt ducks, yeah.
Well, you don't have to hunt them to make a buck off a collar, at least I think.
That's true.
Yeah. Not really my forte. So you...
Wait a second. A duck collar or a duck call? A duck collar would be a thing you would put around the neck.
Not to take a duck on a walk or something. Jeremy knew what I was talking about.
I'm with you. I did too. I watched Duck Dynasty. I got you. I hear you.
So you are a part of a ministry that invites and empowers men to tell their stories and find safety in that place of vulnerability. But before we hear more about that, I'm just curious how you came to this spot where you're like, this is what I want to spend my time and energy and life on. That's a very specific thing. So how did you get there?
Well, it really started around me and being vulnerable with my own story and the healing journey that I've been on for the last 12 years, that I just started taking some risks with my story. And the thing is we feel like if people really knew us, there's no way that they could like us, let alone love us, right? If they really knew us. And I took some risks and found out the opposite to be true. I was vulnerable about some very hard things in my life and found nothing but compassion and love on the other side of taking these big swings at very scary stuff and high risk. And so me and my buddies were just sitting around and started being very vulnerable with one another. And we just found it to be extremely healing. And again, the opposite of what our fear was, is if anybody ever really knew us, there's no way they could like us, let alone love us. So it kind of just organically started with that. And I had the opportunity a few years ago, after a lot of healing, to share my full story that includes a lot of sexual abuse, and mm-hmm. which went down a road of alcoholism, broken family, and lots of step mm-hmm. parents and abuse, yeah. physical abuse and mental abuse. And, again, a lot of sexual abuse that led me down a path, grew up in the church, and led me down a path of addiction and ruining everything in my life. And I ended up with 5 DUIs and just chaos, just brokenness yeah. and pain, unresolved, unprocessed pain.
Yep.
And yeah, so I just started going after healing in those areas, and God showed up in the
meeting.
Yeah, in the midst of it. Yeah.
I just want, take me to that room, because I don't think I've ever heard a person describe, I was sitting around with my buddies and then we just went there. Like, what was the feel? That I just want to feel it. Paint me a picture.
I wish I could tell you I was hunting and it was around a fire, but it was actually in our boardroom. Mm-hmm. My business partner and I and one of our employees were sitting around our board table, and we'd be working on stuff and just started sharing stuff, and like a little at a time. And then we had another friend come, and then he started bringing his employees, and mm-hmm. it just turned into these like healing sessions of 6-7 guys sitting around our conference table talking mm-hmm. about these deep, dark, scary things that we thought we would take to our grave.
Yep.
And we kind of just patterned it after that, and then took it to my barn and mm-hmm. lit a propane fire. And I have this cool old barn that my wife and I restored, and started inviting people. And it was around the early stages of COVID. Mm-hmm. And somebody's got to go first. The thing about vulnerability is somebody's got to go first. And I've received enough healing in my journey that I just would go for it.
Yeah, sure.
And take some risks with things I've been through and experienced that were painful and vulnerable. And then other guys started opening up and sharing. And then it turned into 3 or 4 guys showing up, to 10 guys, to 12 guys, to 25 guys. To now we do it 3 times a month wow. because it gets too big.
Yeah.
And that kind of led into me thinking about the hopeless man. And I've been the hopeless man. Mm-hmm. And I've had a gun in my mouth, and remembering what that felt like, and knowing yeah. that I probably am not alone in that. And that's when I started the Wild Courage podcast. And I was like, man, what if we could just tell stories of redemption to give hope to that guy or gal that's out there, and they feel all alone in their brokenness and in their pain and in their shame that yep. the accuser's got us so deeply involved and wrapped up in. Is what if we could give hope through powerful stories of redemption? So I just started talking to guys that I knew that have gnarly stories. Because of the fire, people are open mm-hmm. and have shared and found healing and redemption through telling their stories and sharing their stories. So it's just really been this organic journey of a couple of knuckle draggers sitting around a fire in a barn in mm-hmm. Emmett, Idaho.
I love on your website, you have so many core values of listening, not trying to fix other people, not preaching at them, just storytelling that's so familiar to us. But Nate, I want to throw this over to you, because tapping into our story and being vulnerable with it is an ongoing
yeah.
thing. It's not a yeah. test. It's not just a testimony. That's a part of it, but we're still alive today, and everything isn't necessarily easy. And you just got to experience it for your own sake, not teaching others, very recently. And I kind of want to hear about the ongoing version of what Jeremy just said in your life and experience.
Well, you know, it's freakingly amazing. I mean, it's just wonderful. So I've been telling my story now. I started on my recovery journey 25 years ago, born in sex addiction. I started telling my story 18 years ago publicly. I've told my story to thousands and thousands of people. I experienced that. I don't think there's any better shame reduction exercise than being in a safe room and saying the unsayable, right? And then you find out, yeah, what a wonderful thing. So, but as you say, Aaron, life moves on. The battle line shifts, thank God, but there's always going to be a battle somewhere. So a month ago now, it's a month ago now, literally a month ago, I was in the woods in Mississippi, rural Mississippi, around a fire with a bunch of guys there by invitation. A dozen of us new guys, and I got to be a new guy this time. Not an observer, not a teacher. I got to be a new guy. Surrounded by 30 to 35 veteran guys who'd already done what we were doing. And over the course of a couple days, each of us got the opportunity to tell our story in short form. We got 15 minutes. And I was skeptical. Turns out you can tell. If you're just going for the gold, you can get to the good stuff in 15 minutes. But it was very well structured. You know, we would tell our story and then we would get feedback from the other guys. But they weren't allowed to ask questions. They weren't allowed to preach. They were allowed to say how our story resonated with their story or how they saw us as they heard our story, that kind of thing. Now, I was a bit of a celebrity there for some of the guys. A lot of those guys were part of Samson. They'd seen me on videos, you know, and I had done a couple of big events before that gathering in the woods. So they'd heard me on the big stage. And the temptation was to just tell the same old story about, you know, where the battle used to be. But I found sitting around the fire, I had a chance to talk about where the battle is. And now I have been telling that story to a few guys that I'm in regular contact with, but never in any kind of a public setting, not with the kind of specificity that I had the opportunity now. So I got to talk about, I was worried about my drinking. I've been trying to quit drinking now for several years with spotty success. But I got to talk about, you know, exactly what my drinking patterns had turned into and how I was lying about it and where I was hiding and where I was buying it, you know, that just the crazy ways I could see myself acting. Okay. And I got to say it there. That was a month ago. I haven't had a drink since.
Come on.
It's not magic, but it's powerful.
Come on.
I got a restart. I got regrounded and I got to be it. It was so encouraging to me to be able to do that. It was so encouraging to the other guys, what several of them told me afterwards, to hear me do that, that I didn't have to be larger than life. And I think the temptation is for any of us who get some attention is to start to try to be larger than life. And that is a setup for disaster.
Yeah, for sure.
So Jeremy, there you go. I just wanted him to tell that experience. What are you thinking and feeling right now? Respond to that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's something that we have a high value for. I learned pretty early on in the beginning of Wild Courage that what you're speaking to, the language I use and I encourage our guys, is there's a difference between vulnerability and transparency. Mm-hmm. If you've received and experienced a lot of healing in one area, our stories become more transparent than vulnerable. It doesn't cost you anything anymore to sell the same old rewrite story, we call it.
Yeah,
and
right.
So I'm very sensitive to what happened with you. And I love that you found vulnerability again, because your initial vulnerability had turned into nothing more than transparency.
Yeah.
And you found vulnerability again. And shame and vulnerability cannot coexist.
Yeah.
That's the beautiful thing about this, is the areas that we feel shame in, and there's hiddenness in there. And the father, being the gentleman, he doesn't kick the door in.
Yeah.
But if we can be courageous enough to be vulnerable with what's happening right now, not what he did 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 months ago. However, there is a place for that. And that is powerful. I think that that's spot on. And that's, anyway, that's the language that I use for that, is the difference between transparency and vulnerability. So,
how many How many guys come to the fire, did you say? That now there are multiple fires, but how, what's the right size group where you don't feel
I would say 8 to 12 is perfect, and we average 20 to 25 three times a month. But we've also learned how to handle 30. And we do different things when that many show up so that everybody gets time. Our core values are laid out very specifically so that we've learned how to gently tell guys to land the plane when they're oversharing and gobbling up all the time. And yeah, that follows
that's nice. Underneath you're our gentle.
Yeah, that falls underneath honor, which is one of our core values. How we honor one another is not by is by being self-aware. That's a really good way to honor your fellow brother, is to be have some self-awareness. And hey, there's 30 guys here tonight. We have 2 hours because we have a hard out at 8:30 to respect people's time. Often people stay for hours later. I go to bed. I'm like, you know where the lights are and how to turn the coffee pot off. But yeah, that's kind of what God showed us. And now we have these fires. I don't know. I think we have a bunch of them going off right now all over the country. And they've come. We've had some equipping retreats, and we do Zoom calls and equip guys and share with them what we've learned at holding space and holding tension. I think the thing we're the most proud of is we hold the tension with those. We rejoice with those who are rejoicing, and we're getting very good at mourning with those who are mourning. So if this guy, and I want to be vague here because this is also holy, holy ground that we protect with men's stories, but we rejoice with the guy who shares about a breakthrough in his marriage, and he's been contending for his wife's heart, and they've had a breakthrough, and we rejoice with him. And we contend so well for the space for the next guy who, you name it, lost a child, lost a marriage, like... But don't hold back wherever you're at. You show up, and we'll hold this space appropriately no matter what. Because you get in these cultures sometimes, and nobody wants to be the guy that brings it down, you know?
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And so we've spent a lot of time like encouraging guys to show up where you're at. And we're not afraid. We have mixed religion. We have guys that come, they're agnostic. They feel safe. To what you said at the beginning, they feel safe in this environment, and we consecrate the night and we pray and we're open about our father-son relationship. And we don't, there's no preaching or teaching. That's not what this is about.
Awesome.
So
awesome.
We just had a retreat in Jackson Hole 3 weeks ago, and I think we had three, maybe four guys that came, paid a lot of money, and knew what they were getting into that are agnostic. And I'm just smiling because I'm like, he's coming for you guys. You don't even know it. Father's coming for you. And they just feel loved and honored. And so it's really beautiful.
Part of that safety is the structure. So tell me a little more, because this is something guys experience in Samson groups when a new person comes in. And most of us have been taught, wow, if somebody says something that sounds really hard, then we either need to fix it or... speak into it. So how do you set, I think you said you read something at the beginning that I don't know. How do you help guys get into that structure that keeps it feeling safe and hold to those just paradigms, the pillars of your group?
Well, it's interesting that we wrote the core values before this was really anything. And that's who we've become, really, it has. And so we talk about our core values every time, even when there's not any new guys. And we talk about holding the tension of being where you're at. And all it takes is one guy to go first. And oftentimes we'll me or Doc or Brian, my buddies who I do this with, pose a question. Like, what's a time in your life when this happened or that happened? Or where do you feel not seen? Where do you not feel heard in your marriage? And sometimes we lob some softballs out there, but 3.5 years in, we get to the deep end of the pool really quickly. Because if three new guys come in, there's 12 old campaigners that have been coming for a couple of years that aren't afraid to go for it. So we've kind of created this culture that we're not affected by new people or people that don't believe like we do. Or, I mean, we have charismatic Baptists all in the middle, Mormons, like it doesn't matter to us. And so I think that's kind of what we've gotten right with all this, is really just honoring and showing up for these guys. We guys that have get in trouble or have court dates, we've been known to show up in support of. And my favorite part is seeing these bridges being gapped from generations. Our our sages that come getting a hold of these young fatherless men and going to have coffee. Come on. It's healing for both of them. You know, it's that's really what the beautiful part of what's happening. The deep brotherhood, we call it, of two guys spinning out of the fire and going and doing life together at a more intimate and deep level and not being alone in whatever they're going through.
Have you caught the attention of the local churches? And if so, what's been their reaction?
Well, provided that I've had pastors reach out to me and ask me, and I'm like, hey, send your guys, if you're okay with somebody smoking a pipe or a cigar or having a beer, the F word said quite a bit. And we talk about Jesus the whole time and about a good, good dad who's not pissed off at his kids. And trying to undo some bad theology without preaching or teaching about he's not bummed out at us. And he's a good, good dad. And most guys feel late. They feel behind. They feel like they're not a good husband. And most of it revolves around feel like they're blown it as a dad.
Oh, really?
That's the common theme, I would say. And looking at our fathers, and I mean, looking at Heavenly Father the same way we look through our earthly dads. So there's a lot in that. So we've had pastors come. We've had pastors. We have a high value for, we're not that interested in what you do for a living, but who we're becoming, right? Dallas Willard. So we don't talk about in generalities. We call it in my troubadourship. We're all troubadours. So at our retreats, we can't, it's off limits to talk about what you do. Because that's that's our go-to, right? Because immediately the pecking order starts happening. The hierarchy starts happening. Oh, he's a lawyer. Oh, he works at 7-Eleven. Oh, okay, I know where to put these guys. So we have signs all over at the retreats, and we put out emails. What is a troubadour? Is a storyteller. We're all storytellers.
Okay.
At the fires, you can talk about what it pertains to in your troubadourship, right? So the pastors that have come, it's been beautiful for them. Because they don't got to be the guy. They don't got to be the guy. And so we have churches that send their guys to our retreats. We've had churches sponsor men to go to our retreats. And they know, they know what they're getting into, because we're pretty open about, hey, this ain't Sunday morning. This ain't Saturday morning men's pancake breakfast deal. It ain't. We get into the mess. And like I said, the F word's probably going to be said. And there's going to be tears. And we're going to talk about Jesus. Like, that's the reality of it.
I feel like you wanted to say this ain't the fucking Saturday morning pancake breakfast, but
I did.
You know, you can say that.
I don't know. You guys. I don't know you guys well enough. I want to honor you.
You certainly can.
Well, I appreciate it. Tell me how your relationship with your wife has changed as you've gone on this journey.
Well, my wife and I were separated for 4 years. The lying about drinking, getting two DUIs in 48 hours while we were taking a break, and me maintaining my sobriety with her, lying to her, did a ton of damage, as you can imagine. So yeah, we were separated for a long time, and I went and did the work. And from a very safe distance, my wife watched me do the work. I was plugged into AA because I had to, because it turns out when you get two DUIs in 48 hours, that's frowned upon. So you can imagine, and especially when it's DUI number 4 and 5. And always maintain a job. I'm not living under a bridge. Often had six-figure jobs, you know, very high-functioning alcoholic. My identity steeped in all the wrong things. And so from a safe distance, she watched my world come apart. And she left and took my son and bought her own house and property and moved on with her life. And she said that God just never released her to divorce me, even though the papers were on the table. And I went to work, boys. I went and got into my story, and I got into all the pain of the sexual abuse and the betrayal. My mom left when I was little, the whole thing, right? Yeah. And I did the work. And I'm still doing the work because you don't arrive. And I tell people who ask me often, how you doing? And my best response to that is my wife really, really likes me.
I love that.
That's the amazing tale of the tape. That's the fruit of this journey. The people that are in my inner circle, my relationships are healthy. And if they're not, I can humble myself and clean up my side of the mess. Mm-hmm. And my wife really, really likes me. And my kids jump in my arms when I walk in the door. So I feel like these men that I've surrounded myself with, who are also in the journey and haven't sat down their swords, like many, many good men in and out of the church, have given up the good fight. They've set their swords down. And they're more in, you know, they're into their three fingers of scotch four times a night and porn and giving up on their kids and their marriage, and they've given up. And these men I run with, they haven't.
Yeah.
And me running with them and gleaning from them and getting fathered by men that are younger than me because of humility is the difference. And my wife is so supportive of this mission. Because I don't put it before her or my kids. I've created boundaries around the men that I help and come to my office, and the mission of Wild Courage doesn't come before them. I don't answer my phone on the weekends or at night.
Okay.
And so I've created some safety to protect my family from the mission, because you go talk to pastors' kids about dad, and they're some of the most fragmented people in our communities, because the mission, because of their own egos, became more important than their own families. And we always say, if we don't walk family out first, God, burn this thing to the ground, all the way to the ground, because it's not worth it. My three sons and my daughter, they need to see dad walk this out. The things he talks about on the podcast and talks to people about, I got to walk it out for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And my wife sees the fruit of that. My wife is the fruit of that, right? Because she's so supportive of what we're doing.
That is amazing and deeply true. I love that. Well, how do people find you, find your retreats? Maybe there's people in the area that want to pop by. How do people start to understand this world that you guys have created there?
Thewildcourage.life is our website. And the Wild Courage podcast. We have an amazing team out of Austin called Jesus on Every Screen that's handling all of our social media. And they're doing fantastic job of getting this out there. They're like, what do you want this to be like? And I'm like, it just can't be religious. And I don't care what you do. But it can't be religious, because this mission isn't just for men in the church. It is, but it isn't. This is for my brothers who are all areas in their life of this journey. And I just want to introduce them to a good, good father who's not pissed off at them. That's it. Because I can't fix anybody anyway. And then, the goal is that people hear the podcast and then they worm trail down, find our website, find fires that are popping up all over the country. I think we got one starting in Canada soon. And then they go get plugged in local community, because we've all seen these mountaintop experiences and then 2 weeks later it's gone.
Yeah.
And so our heart is that men would get in community in these fires and find a few close men to go do life with and to be vulnerable with and take risks like you did a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And transition, because it's really about transformation, right? I know the church is screaming for revival, but revival isn't generational. It's good for that generation in that time. And I think God's wanting to do something in the heart of men to teach them how to transform generations. And that's one guy activating his heart, going home and contending for his family and his wife's heart and showing his kids.
Yeah.
Modeling it for them so that they, this is how I think we change it. I think that's how we change the narrative. So anyway, that's how you can find us. And that's kind of our mission and our goal and what we're fired up about.
Hey, I have a question. I know we're close to wrapping, but you mentioned that you had to go to AA. I got sober, sexually sober in 12-step recovery, and used to go to a lot of AA meetings. It was transformational for me. It was helpful that I was deprived of my religious language and my pat answers. And I had to listen to people who didn't have what I had always been told was a requisite spiritual pedigree. And God met me in a new way. So what role did your time in AA play in learning this? I'm hearing the language of therapy. I'm hearing the language of story. And I think I'm also picking up the language of recovery. Am I right?
So AA, I went to for 2 years because I had to. I went to this little AA group in Skull Valley, Arizona, in this little church. At Skull Valley has a post office outside of Prescott, Arizona, where I was living at the time. And I think there was 350 years of sobriety involved in this group of 10, 12 men.
Oh, wow.
Combined. And the old timers. And my wife had just left me, and I was able to come apart in that room and not be judged in that room. And I loved it. And it was very powerful to me. I love that it's there for people. To me, it felt like doing this for the rest of my life, having to do this like it is for some people, felt like bondage to me.
Yep.
So I honor, I value, I'm grateful for AA and what it represents in my life and the men in that room that gave me the nuggets that I needed to help me through a very painful time.
Yeah.
And I'm also glad that I got delivered from alcoholism. So if it's a disease, I don't have it and I don't need to go to AA anymore, but that's my story. I don't ever have to go again. And I've never been tempted.
But that doesn't mean that you don't need brothers anymore.
No, that aspect of it, I think, is the model is not absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that was the powerful part of AA, is not feeling alone in your shame and your brokenness and your bullshit and having not being judged, because that doesn't happen in the church all the time. So it created that safety that is powerful and necessary in the journey.
Wow. Well, you are a delightful man to talk with. And I hope that sometime I'm going to be quite a ways from you when I come to Idaho in the fall.
7 hours.
Oh, geez. Probably too far to drive for a fire. But I hope that someday our paths cross. In the meantime, I hear the Father, I'm sure Aaron does too, all over what you guys are doing.
Thank you so much.
We're in the same stream. You know, so grateful that we get to do this together. We get to serve together. We get to experience healing together. And I have just really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much, Jeremy.
And listeners, let's go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Jeremy.
Yeah, I was just going to say thank you, Nate and Aaron, for having me on. What an honor. And I look forward to our motorcycle gangs, as my partner says, getting together and swapping badges.
Okay. I'm
down for that. Absolutely. Listeners, check it out, learn some more, and stick with us because we will be right back here on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Pirate Monk Podcast. What a great interview. I thoroughly enjoyed that, Rob. I'm sure you did, and I want to hear some thoughts. I just want to jump in first I definitely agree with Nate. They are, his organization, Jeremy's organization, and Samson are going down the same stream. I love the stream. I'm so grateful, like I said earlier, that to have found a safe place, a place to be vulnerable and transparent. I love how Jeremy brought out the differences between those. That was, and I love how he mentioned, you know, what does it cost you? Does it cost me to share this? Or am I, I think there's still a value for transparency and yet, of course, right? But it's better than lying, or it's better than hiding and, you know, blocking the truth. But then that power of vulnerability is just, and I don't know about you, brother, but I have found as I walk with brothers like you that sometimes it just wants to spill out. I just want to share something. Yeah. I guess we would call it, I want to be known. And I don't know, I got to be careful, right? I'm in the McDonald's drive-thru line, although that's not accurate. I don't, you know, but I'm in the drive-thru line at a fast food place. They just want to know what my order is. They don't want to know my life story. You know what I mean? Like I've got to pull in the reins, or I mentioned earlier that I'm dating and I'm always looking for that pace of when do I share what? I want to be present in my heart and my body. I want it to be heart led and I want it to be spirit led and I want all to be healthy and at the right pace, but it's easy for me to get in my head and just, well, when's the right thing and what's the right thing to say and do? But I just love the organic nature of how this ministry just jumped in to really meeting the needs it looks like it just honors. They discovered that there is a way that God made us and he's not changing his mind and we can't undo it, you know, but we can respond to it. And as we do, and just even the idea of somebody going first and being vulnerable and being brave, you know, just that courage to step out and in a safe place, you know, not blindly, not recklessly, but in a safe environment, like sharing that, something real and vulnerable that actually doesn't just bless that person. Yes. Right. Cause he says shame and vulnerability can't coexist. Love that mantra. I wrote that one down, but then it also breeds, it also kind of is an invitation for others, right? Like any of that resonate with you?
Oh yeah. It's the culture. You know, it's the culture and the gift that so many men across the U.S. and I experienced personally for the majority of my life. And I go back to the same thing I've heard from Nate and so many others. I don't wish addiction on anybody, but I wish recovery on everybody. Because and that's not original, but I think the gift that Jeremy's bringing into his organization is the same gift that we experience every time we dial into a meeting or join a group or a book club or whatever the case might be. We get a chance to do exactly what you described, and I won't repeat it again because you said it so well. But it's creating a culture. Jeremy's creating a culture of courageous men who are willing to show up with their entire heart, not a part of their heart, not the part of their heart that they want people to see. Not the part of them that they want to be recognized or admired for. That is way too easy in what I'll just call generic today's society. But there's something so much deeper that we all have been made for and desire. I'm just going to speak for myself. I, for so many years, settled for less. And Jeremy and Samson and so many other organizations are starting to create avenues and venues for men to come together to say, hey, there's so much more. I'm made for so much more. And it starts with a conversation. It starts with an admission. It starts with a confession in a safe environment. And then it builds and it builds and it snowballs. And gosh, I looked up Jeremy's website and they've got little pockets of these campfires popping up all over the US and across the globe. And it all started from one guy who said, I want to be known, from his, you know, coworkers, board of directors. And he took the courage to step out in faith. And so, I don't know, I just felt so inspired. And yet at the same time, it resonated to such a large degree for me in my own journey.
Oh man, I love that. He mentioned something to the effect of, these men share things that they thought they would take to their grave. And I thought, wow, how much was taken to the grave? And now, you know, by individuals that are gone before us, and how much do I not, do you not, do other men get to not take to their grave and actually be known? The John Lynch quote, but you know, from The Cure, but I love how he talks about, when I tell the truth, and it's not pretty, like, I'm actually, people want to come closer to me and they want to know me even more. Right. Yes. And that paradox in my own brain, but as I continue to step into it and exercise it, it's just, it continues to be something that attracts others to do the same. And I just love that, you know me, I'm like, you know, I did ministry and in the church. I want to see, there's something in my heart that wants to see these principles work, not necessarily just in the church, but I guess, I love how this is open to church people, but he's like, it's not going to be churchy. Like, we're not going to make, it's not that kind of a ministry. And yet he describes it as the Father pursuing the son, right? Even if it doesn't even know or acknowledge that he's a son yet, but he's being pursued by a father who's not mad at him, who loves him. Like, that is, isn't that the heart of what Jesus did anyway? And whether it's in the four walls of a church or whether it's around a campfire with big old beards or bald head like me, it don't matter. It's as long as you're functioning in that. Man, I just feel like God's there, and I value it. I honor it.
Oh man, I just, the words, as I'm listening to you, the words that come to my mind, there is freedom on the other side of vulnerability, transparency, and honesty. Mm. And I think it's that crucible moment in life, even in our own recovery journeys, of, am I really going to share it all? And am I really going to share after I've made a mistake? And so oftentimes what has happened for me is, as I've had some success, you know, some version of success and recovery, and then I make a mistake, it's like, wow, do I want to hold this image out to everybody that I've created and cultivated and curated as transparent, honest, and, you know, having success? Or do I want to be known in the moment? And you know my story from last fall, after a major breakup, I struggled, you know, I struggled with my sobriety. And there was a part of me that did not want to come to the table because I was seen and known for, you know, X, Y, and Z, fill in the blank level of success. And yet at the same time, there was so much freedom in sharing with you and so many other guys. And the interesting part that people said back to me was, number one, still love you. You're an amazing guy. But number two, thank you for being real, because I didn't know that you were making any mistakes. You are more relatable in your failure than you are otherwise. And so there was a lot of honor that came with that transparency and vulnerability along the way.
Wow. Man, I love that. I want to add something to that. I'll just share a quick story. I was in Las Vegas last weekend. We celebrated a destination birthday party for my couple family members. And So we were there, and I also have some very important people from my past church experience that relocated there, and they lived there, and I got to connect. So on two fronts, right? I was with family. I felt like I belonged. I celebrated, you know, the birthday, and I had great experiences, you know, eating Italian food and whatever else, you know, just enjoying the family. And I also got to balance that out with this other, you know, couple that I got to stay at their house and experience their house that they got and celebrate that with them. And there go to a local breakfast place with them, just do life with them, you know, since they moved, they've been back out in California several times because, you know, their family still lives here, but I got to see them out in their habitat, so to speak. And you know what, one thing that I recognize when I came home, I was looking for connection. But it was connection to celebrate the weekend. Yes. I wanted somebody to be with me in celebration. And that's a factor too. Not just when life is hard, but also when life is difficult. Because I know I've used my drug of choice as a celebratory tool, not just as a medication, right? And that was something that I noticed. I really wanted somebody to come alongside of me. And thankfully I did end up getting that. It didn't happen in the way of the timeline. And I wasn't as aware of it coming, you know, re-entering the orbit of my everyday life as I would have liked, but it did happen. And now it's more on my radar. Yeah. Like, okay, well, it's almost like, okay, hey, using my communication skills, Rob, can you celebrate this with me? I had something good happen in my life last night. I need a little bit of the vitamin of celebration, know, to use that term and just like, wait a minute, who can be with me in this? Because I don't want to be tempted to celebrate alone. You know, I don't want to do life alone. So I love that. I love that aspect. And
hey, real quick.
Great stuff, brother.
Can I add, I know we're running short on time, but I just want to add to that. The beautiful part of what you just described, and this is a whole nother conversation, different podcast, but coming in and out of recovery, describing our needs, describing my needs is something that I struggle with. I struggled with. I used to ask for needs in a very unhealthy way. Coming out of recovery, having the courage and the articulation to ask for something that's a need is really hard for me. And I heard you describe that you asked someone to be with you. I have a need to celebrate with someone. And I just want to honor you for the courage it took, because I know personally how hard it is to ask for my needs to be met. So just want to honor you. And thanks for sharing that story. It's an amazing, amazing way to be vulnerable and honest in a different kind of way.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. That topic's great. Speaking of for our needs, communication, knowing who we are, having boundaries, and so many great gifts of recovery. And I wish recovery on everyone, you know, like you said earlier. Yes. So great being with you, brother. We're going to close it off, podcast, this episode, just a great, great time. I really enjoyed that interview, really enjoyed chatting with you. We're going to sound off. We love all of you listeners. Thank you so much for being part of Samson, being part of this podcast community. And we'll see you next time on the Pirate Monk Podcast.
The Pirate Monk Podcast is produced by members of the Samson Society. Send your feedback or questions to piratemonkpodcast@gmail.com. Please give us a 5-star review on iTunes and share the podcast with a friend. For more information, please visit samsonsociety.com.